Boys, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having us again.
Thank you.
It's as I was saying, like I haven't done the podcast for a while. I reckon it's been about a year since I started doing. So I stopped pretty much since Fish. I kind of stopped the podcast.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's been about a year where I stopped, but it's probably the funnest year I had interviewing all these different entrepreneurs and business people, and then obviously we opened Fish and Gela and the small side hustle, The Orchard, which you boys have been a big part of, supplied us with.
It's
made
out crazy to see it form and get to where it is.
Yeah, well, you seen it when it was just a piece of land, and now it's
Jake's crazy visions up in his office.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy to see where we started to where it is now. So yeah, thanks for obviously helping with that, boys. But we'll get into that a little bit. But yeah, as I said, like I missed doing the podcast, and I think after you guys announced, what we're going to talk about, I thought it was a good way to get back into the podcast and talk about the realities and the truths of hospitality. And you guys spoke a bit about it during the last episode, but I think it's probably even more raw and real now. So thanks for coming in. And obviously, again, thanks for being honest, because I think you boys are probably the most transparent people like in the industry.
Maybe that's where we've gone wrong.
No, I think it's been great. From a hospitality point of view, I think it's been excellent.
No, but, I enjoy it.
Yeah, so anyone that hasn't listened to the episode, go back to... we last spoke in April 2021, so just after the first round of COVID, which is crazy, yeah.
Wow, it seems like... yesterday, but
I know.
Time ago.
Yeah, it's so true, eh? But obviously, yeah. So anyone that wants to, that's listening to this, press pause, go back to episode 36, and it talks about your journey. You know, obviously, you guys have come from apprentice chefs to opening 4 venues, food trucks, running events, and obviously the production kitchen, which is pretty exciting. Before we get into anything, I think how are you boys? Like, I know it's been a rough year. How you doing?
Yeah, we're fine. Everyone, once we announce the news about where we're heading, we're getting messages like, hope everything's all right. And there's a part of us that there is a bit of sadness, don't get me wrong. But we're also grateful for the lessons learned. And it's not the be-all, end-all. It's not the death of Burgerhead. I just keep telling everyone it's a big sidestep into something else. And we're going to be better on the other side of it.
Yeah, where, pardon me, COVID, it was a lot of uncertainty. And then we opened up these shops after COVID, and that brought a whole heap of extra stress. And I think I was talking to Mr. G actually the other night after Parrot Lanes, and I said, for the first time in 2 years, I'm actually happy.
Wow.
it feels like a weight lifted off our shoulders.
I was gonna say, is that happiness just that pressure's gone?
It's sort of, it brought clarity, I guess, to our life, of what was really important. Like, it was grow, and that brought a whole heap of extra stresses that we weren't really prepared for or ready for, and not from just internally, externally, from like the market, employment market, the economic market. And once that sort of got taken away, it was just all right, well, now we have a clear direction forward. How can we get back to profitability? How can we keep the brand alive? All those sort of questions were, I guess, what sort of led us to where we were going. Because if we kept going down that path, it wasn't a pretty one.
No, it would have just been...
Yeah, yeah. It's so good that, even after everything that's happened, to hear that, you guys... I'm talking to you now, and I feel like your energy's excellent. You're still high spirits. And it's so good to hear that you're, like you said, you're happy. You're happy
it's
again.
Honestly, so, in the first sort of year of business, it was figuring everything out, how to do anything, because we had no idea. Then years sort of 2.5 to 3-ish... it was more in control, felt like we had a better understanding, and it was all about ideas, growing, putting things in place.
I think it's important to note that in that period of time, we were at 2 shops, 1 food truck, right? And it was still manageable. Right?
Yeah, and so that's manageable. And then once COVID hit, it was this massive uncertainty of what the hell was going to happen. And then we had a massive pivot, started doing the boxes, started taking the truck out to random areas every night. Started to do well, but it was still uncertain, how long did it last, and what's going on. And we was working our asses off, but that was to keep everyone employed, to keep everything going, the wheels turning.
Yeah.
And then going for these extra shops, that's when it really went south and created this beast that we couldn't control. You think about when you own 1 venue, if you've got sort of 10 hours of firefighting to do within that, times 4 venues, times a production kitchen, the trucks. And so we'd go to work, do a 12-hour day and do absolutely fuck all. Because it's just...
And I think it's important
putting out the fires.
Yeah. I think it's important to note there too that we, when we did sign these extra leases, and there was supposed to be a third that we were supposed to open up in that same period of time.
Box Hill, yeah.
Crazy, yeah. But like we built up, you know, a nice war chest after COVID. We did really well. We were fortunate in that respect, but we worked our asses off in that. Mm. I think for the first part of COVID, I think we worked for maybe, but collectively we had maybe 6 days off in 9 months.
Wow.
Out of the tour bus, right? So we were burnt out.
No one sees that.
But we didn't know that. We didn't know that we were burnt out, I don't think. I think we just kept grinding because it was, what are you going to do? Are you going to sit at home and, like, you know, wallow in your pity of, like, oh, I can only sit at home?
I think it was also the adrenaline because every day there was something that was like, okay, we got to pack the boxes, do the boxes, organise them. Then it's like, okay, is the truck booked out, everything prepping? And there was a massive, the amount of food we've gone through was pretty exceptional as well.
Yeah, if anybody was following along back then, I think, like, I don't really get too nostalgic on things, but it was pretty cool to look back on photos of where we're doing those boxes, and we had like 5 or 6 pallets of those boxes going
out. That was insane.
That was fucking phenomenal, man.
And the Sydney Direct, they doubled up as the logistics team because they lost a lot of their venues and a lot of their work, so they became like a cold logistics company for a lot of places doing similar things. And they were saying out of everyone they were doing it for, those little boxes were like the busiest. It's pretty cool that
they were sending, I think, 1,100, I think, boxes out all around Sydney, and we weren't even doing interstate at that point. So that was like, yeah, that was cool. It was phenomenal. And then, so I think we were burnt out, and we didn't really notice at the time our team was getting burnt out because some of our key team were doing hours just as much. But it wasn't like we were forcing them. People were, like, they couldn't do anything else, and so they were happy to have a purpose to go out and to work and to, you know. And so they were racking up some big hours, making some more money, and everybody was having a great time. And so we were like, okay, well, we've got this great team that have been behind us. We've got a bit of money. Now we can sit on our hands because we think the economy might go to shit, or we can do something and have a crack, you know. And we've always been about having a crack.
And we wanted to grow and develop the team as well because the whole plan that we had back then was to get a couple more stores private, iron out some kinks, and gear up 2 franchise.
And to provide a pathway for our people. Because, like, at the end of the day, we are a burger shop, but we always wanted to be more, right?
Mm.
And so it was like, well, we got these great people, and they're just going to, you know, eventually leave us because there's no career progression. Yeah. So that's why we wanted to bring on more stores. We had the money to do so at that point in time. And then, you know, we didn't realise it at the time. We signed all these leases, and then people, you know, slowly got burnt out. The employment market shifted.
Yeah.
So it got really hard to replace those key people that left. And that was, I guess, the beginning of our sort of downfall, per se, you know. Which, you know, had you had your time again, we probably would have been a lot slower in how we grew the shops. But we were overly confident, I guess. And
yeah, and I mean, you had the energy and you know, and I think... the crazy thing is, I don't think anyone outside the industry knows how hard it, COVID was hard, but then it was actually a blessing for a lot of people. But it was after
when we reopened, that's
when everyone got hit. So for you boys, obviously, you know, you announced recently that, you know, you were closing your stores. Definitely not the death of Burger Head because the brand's too strong, and you guys have this amazing ability to pop up in the most amazing events and places. And he's always hustling, and I love that. But If you had to put it down, like, and obviously all that came down with pressure and financial stress and you know, family stress and all those kinds of things. But if you had to narrow it down to a couple of points, where did it all go wrong for the stores?
I'd say call it a business fundamental would be overcapitalization. If we'd done one store instead of the two together, I think we would have been all right. We would have had the team to...
Oh, we most certainly would have been fine if we had opened just one at that point in time.
Yeah, we would have had the team to, like, give them the tender love and care and really, like, look after them. Call it, look, sales slipped to where they did, but with a bit more cash behind us and a bit more of a team, could have made it work better and not be spread so thin.
So growing too quick is the biggest...
100%.
100%. That's what sort of set it off, because then we grew too quick and then everything that comes with that chased it. So we... like I said, created this beast we couldn't control where we're just running around, looking after everything, trying to fix things all the time instead of it running and us tinkering the machine. And
at the end of the day, it always comes down to money, right?
Mm.
Like, if we had more money, we could have employed the people that we required at that point in time. we could have had the capital to see us through the shit economic times, which I don't think they're going away. The rates are still high.
Yeah,
they're talking about, they pause them and they're talking about November going
creeping up. Back up. And that was really the catalyst. Like, we were limping by. We would have, you know, if the rates were low and people still had disposable income,
a bit more confidence. And
yeah, you know, I've got a bit of a mortgage myself, so I'm, you know, well aware of how people are experienced. My mortgage, I think, went from 1,300 to like 2,200. Now, I'm fortunate enough that, you know, that I still live at home. That's an investment, but for me, that's like an extra 900 a month. And for me, okay, manageable, but for many families, where do you find 900 bucks a month? You know, that's shy of what, 10 odd grand a year. That comes from your hairdresser, that comes from your local eating out, that comes from, you know, you might have got your car serviced on time, now you're not, you're pushing it the extra 5,000 Ks. So slowly, small business is going to get impacted. And that's sort of what happened to us. And it's happening to your local barber, it's happening to your local cafe, it's happening to everybody that, you know, employs the people around you. So that's where we're going to start to see the collapse of small business. You're already seeing it. You look at High Street and Penrith, and you know, you look at St Mary's, you look in Blacktown, every street there's for lease signs coming up. There's lots of opportunities. That presents lots of opportunities for other people as well. So it's just a cycle in the economy. And that's why I don't think, for me personally, I'm not really too emotionally damaged about what's happened to us, because I understand it is a cycle. We're on the wrong side of the cycle, unfortunately, but, you know.
That's also the other lessons learned. Like, say we don't stay in hospo, we do something else. It's lessons learned in growing any business.
Yeah. And for you know, for what it's worth, like, we got the wrong side of the coin, you know. Like, it could have gone the other way very easily.
We could have opened these shops and done exceptionally well, and the plan could have come to fruition.
But if we sat on our hands back then when we did have, you know, the capital, and we waited for this, then, you know, we probably would have gone better. But if it didn't go that way, well, we would have just been sitting on our hands. So we're happy that we had a dig. We're upset that it's gone this way. But, like, we're still young. I'm 31 and Tim's, what, 29? So, like...
And I think that's what's crazy. What you boys have achieved in that short period of time, what you've been through and what you've done, I think you're probably thinking, you know, it was a failure, but you said it yourself, it's actually not a failure. Like, the business itself, the brand itself is so strong, it's so amazing, but if you hadn't tried, you know...
We'd never know.
Never know, and it's...
Money comes, money goes, man, you know? Like, we'll find money.
And there's people we've seen, because for some reason our shop's shutting has made national news, I don't know why.
You reckon it's the amount of power you guys had in the social media with, like, you know, all the amazing marketing.
We didn't want the attention.
We just saw a ton of fans, and then all the news stations picked it up. But we saw comments, people like
everybody
shit, and it's whatever. Like, it doesn't really get to us. But I can guarantee that 99% of those people haven't gone and given something a crack like that. And anyone who does, like yourself, sits on the other side and goes, at least you had a dig and, like, you understand.
Yeah. And to give you guys context, like, I opened Percy's when I was 32. So you boys have, like, and I played it safe for so long. I said no to so many things, and I missed out on a couple of great opportunities. But the fact that you boys have been out there, what you're going to learn from this experience, I think, is going to be worth, it's going to be 1,000 times more valuable than if you hadn't done it, you know.
And how different do you reckon your life would be if you'd started Percy earlier, or like you took opportunities?
Well, I think it's you know, I was talking about this and I was like, I don't like to take too many risks, and then, but I think that slowed my growth down.
The orchard's not a risk.
The orchard was, like, I think because we've been in Penrith our whole lives, we knew it would work. How well was, we didn't know.
I don't think it was a risk, but I think it was ballsy.
Yeah. Me and Jake always talk about it. Like, it's like, we put our
sure thing, but it was hard to
commit to.
The budget changed 15 times. Like, and when you we literally ran out of money, and obviously, like, you know, it was like, all right, what's next? How do we do this? And, but I think just that resilience you build through.
But that's life, man. There's problems, right?
It's 100%.
Like, we've still got problems now trying to get out of, like, some of the things we're trying to get out of. And it's like, fuck, how are we going to solve this? But at the end of it, I'm just like, I go to sleep knowing, fuck, I'll wake up tomorrow.
Yeah.
And the idea, the solution will hit me, or I'll speak to somebody who will help me get that solution.
Yeah.
And there were some fucking dark times, like, along the way, man. like, yeah, some bloody dark times. And for the most part, the last 3 months, once we came to this realization, fuck.
Happens. Honestly, last sort of month or two, for the first time, felt like just better. Like, I think when you're going through shit, it always feels like weight on you and, like, you just can't do anything almost.
I've never had
it. It's almost this uncertain. Like, we'd wake up and go to work and it'd almost be this, like, not knowing what's going to, the day's going to take us, where it's going to go, what's going to happen, because you're just doing shit.
It's like crippling anxiety, hey, like, being at the point where you're like, we don't know what's next. How are we going to wake? How are we going to pay the bills today? How are we going to pay wages? Can you talk to us about, again, most of the people that listen to this are people in the industry, and I think everyone, I've gone through the darkest times, and I try to always pinpoint mental health in this. Can you just talk to us about some of the dark times?
Easy, man. Like, I've never been in this situation of a breakup, for instance, but I've seen people around me that have been in a breakup or, you know, marriage breaking down. So I'm going to, I guess, give an analogy there. But, you know, when you first break up with somebody, it's very dark. You don't know the way forward for your life. Like, fuck, what does life look like in the next 6 months? And that was very much what that looked like for us. Or for me, and I'm going to assume Tim as well. Like, as I came to the realization, I think I actually spoke to you. I was in the Philippines. I was on my first holiday.
Yeah.
And I think I spoke to you for about an hour on the beach one day. And I came to the realization on that holiday that this is the way life's probably going. Like, we're probably going to lose everything. And I made my peace. I made my peace that day on that beach.
Quite frankly. Stages of grief, I think.
Yeah, you know, and I made my peace with that on that day. And I was like, well, fuck, like, I tried. If this is the way it's going to go, let's control
the narrative as
well. Yeah, exactly, yeah. And at that point in time, it just becomes about planning of how to get out of things. So looking at your leases, looking at, you know, your liabilities, looking at who you owe money to and who can you pay last. And then working backwards of, you know, how do we get out of this situation? And so at that point in time, I actually felt I was going to lose everything. And so, you know, we met with different people and it's coming to that acceptance of what's life going to look like and then how can we control that narrative to control our mental health. Now, I could have easily spiraled and, oh, fuck, I'm losing everything, I'm in the world ending, da-da-da-da, you know. But I don't have that mentality of life. Like, well, I've still got a bit of control. And if I've got control, I can choose the way my destiny goes, per se. So came back, said to Tim, like, I deal with more of the financial side of things in the business. So I came back to Tim, sat him down, we went through everything, looked at all of our scenarios and formulated a plan to get out of it, right? And that was back in Feb. And so we're now, what are we, in October now?
8 months.
8 months. And there were some dark times along that ride. And we're lucky we got a travel, mate.
The other way was we could have just thrown in the towel and a lot earlier as well. Mm. But we still have been fighting for sort of 18 months at it to figure out a way to save it or the pivot and everything.
Like, we were trying to sell shops, but in this market, nobody was buying.
Yeah, so seller's market, yeah.
Yeah, so it was just selling shops or figuring out ways to sort of get out, and it was always fighting it to see what we could do up until last minute, pretty much. And then we've got this plan, and it's the best thing for us.
Yeah, well, you guys went through... sorry, before we go on, Tim, like, for you, how was that period for you, like, going through that whole process as well? Did you have the same mindset?
Yeah, it's always been... It was always tough and shit. Like, you're always... We got into business, ambition, and everything like that. And so the first few years of business when everything's going well and you're growing and you're accomplishing everything that you want to then see it very, very slowly, a day at a time, crumble, like, it hurts. It hits your ego. Not sort of in an egotistical way, but when you've got ambition behind you and pushing for everything and you're creating life and writing your narrative, you see it fall a day at a time. It's hard. But I also know that at 29 years old, losing everything, I've still got an MBA pretty much from doing this. And the experience makes you come back, and I'm fortunate that friends and family around me, and I know that even if we did lose everything, I'd come back. And that comes down to the mental game.
Our business is a mental game.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Yeah. You talk to any entrepreneur who's made it, they always say hard work, and then mentality. And it is just 1 foot in front of the other.
I'm going to pitch in here and just say, if we didn't have each other, we probably both would have been done 2 or 3 years ago.
Wow. Well, that was one of my questions, because I think, you know, I've never seen a partnership so great and also the friendship so strong. I think every partnership that I know, there's always been ups and downs. Obviously, there's ups and downs, but the strength that you guys have together, talk to us about that and how that helped you get through. Like,
we always joke around. So he actually got married recently, and I was
congrats, Joshy.
Thank you.
I was best man, and in the speech, I even said it, and I'll say it now, but because people often ask us what it's like with a business partnership and stuff, and we always say it's like a marriage where we don't fuck. And it's true. Like, I'm pretty sure we got access to each other's net banks. We've got money on the line, share bank accounts, share everything. We know sort of every detail.
He probably knows more than my wife and being able to get the money out, to be quite frank.
I'm honestly in awe of the friendship, because I think that's more valuable, and what you have been through is just, that's a friendship for life, right?
We would have, like Josh just said, probably called it quits years ago if we were on our own.
So was it like one day you were down, you'd pick up Josh and vice versa?
100%. Yeah? It'd be like, bro, pull your head out of your, like, move on, like, we're going to survive. And then I'd have my moments for, definitely the last 2 years for me, I'd say Tim's been a bit more mentally strong on it. And I think that compounded for me because, you know, I had a kid along the way. And so it's like, well, shit, I don't want to miss out on all these, you know, great years. That was why I wanted to be in business. So I watched my mentors around me be stuck in a kitchen at 40 odd years old, and they're great chefs and great business people, but they didn't get to see their families.
Yeah.
And for me, starting a business was as much about, when that time came for me, I wanted to have the control and the ability to, you know, be a part of my kid's life. And that slowly slipped away. And I, you know, I wouldn't say I missed out on a heap of stuff, but I've had to do a lot of it over FaceTime and whatever. And that's shit. And so that's, you know, a reason for, I guess, the happiness now, because I'm starting to get some of that back. And, but there was definitely times where he was having a really crap time and I had to pull him out of the gutter, and there was plenty of times he had to pull me out of the drain. you just, you know, we got on, and then when we, you know, if we didn't have each other, I would have been out probably at the beginning of COVID.
Yeah.
You know, like,
having that support is unbelievable. We bounce off each other, like you said. And how's it been, you know, for your partners, and obviously you just got married, but like relationships, how's the pressure been with all that?
Everyone wants a hard-working, ambitious dude until they're at work all day. I've got a partner I started dating at the start of the year, and she's very supportive, but she struggles to understand the hours and why.
I'm fortunate that Lauren's been with me for 14 years last week.
So she's been with you through the whole...
She's been there from the 80-hour weeks when I work for somebody else. She'd pick me up late at night. Yeah, she needed the ring a lot sooner than she got it, that's for sure. She's been there from thick and thin. She would like more time. But she gets it.
Yeah.
You know.
In reality, it's all for them. It's at the end of the day.
Yeah, like, that's what they sometimes struggle to understand, is like, we're not just doing this for fun. We're doing it for the life we're trying to create and provide for you in a few years.
Yeah, it's just that like you said, Tim, you know, sometimes from the outside it looks glamorous and living this life and business owners, but, you know, it is the anxiety, staying up at night, not being home. That just causes that stress and pressure on the relationship. And you know, say, like you're saying, your wife's been with you 14 years through the whole journeys of you starting as a chef. You know, same thing with my wife. She came from the same industry. So me doing the 80 hours when I first got married was, okay, I get it.
That's like,
don't love it, but I get it, you know. Yeah. So never makes it easier, but obviously having that support makes...
Oh, man, I had to find a new partner now, I'd be fucked. I'd be proper fucked. Like, trying to find somebody that...
A new tour or a chick would be on Australia's Funniest Home Videos.
And again, I'll probably touch on this a few times as well, but I just think your attitude, like, you guys have got this amazing energy and attitude about you. Is no matter what's going on, you can keep this positive and happy outlook and have a laugh, and having each other obviously makes that...
What do we always say? If
we don't have a laugh, we're done. Yeah.
If we go a day without laughing or something, we throw in the
table. And I'm lucky that Tim fancies himself sort of a bit of a stand-up comedian. To be fair, his best man's speech was pretty cracker.
Yeah.
It went for a little bit too long, but it was funny.
did people cry?
No, there was no crying.
It was
just laugh crying.
Laugh crying. I like that. Yeah. All right, so you boys obviously, and thanks for touching on the, you know, stuff that not a lot of people like to talk about, but a lot of people want to hear about, like, what's it really like? Obviously, you touched on it a little bit, Tim, where you guys tried to pivot and different concepts, and we spoke about this as well, like, before, you know, a couple of months ago, talking about, you know, discount, going down the, you know, the cheap route. You know, there was an instance where you guys had $5 cheeseburgers in store, and that was amazing. Like, shops went nuts, but then obviously that created a lot of issues, you know, logistically. Talk to us about some of the things you guys did during that process that you thought would help get you through that.
Well, I guess one of the first pivots we had was with COVID. So business was great up until COVID, and then obviously when it all hit and lockdown started, we had this sort of talk of like, okay, revenues get to here, we're going to do this. If they get to here, we're going to do that. And then pivoted to the boxes, pivoted to the truck in random sort of housing estates and doing well. But then outside COVID, when things opened up and sales started to slump and things got tougher, we kept looking within about what we could do. And you've always got two sets of customers. You've got repeat customers that love you and then new customers. So we were looking at everything to bring them in, change marketing up a bit for new customers, and then looked at retention as well. We looked at new menus, new products, upping specials, just to keep it fresh and exciting for customers. For new people, looked at price as a lever, and looked at going more affordable, but then other headaches that come with that can be a lot trickier. We looked at the loyalty program increasing and membership sort of thing.
One big strategy that we were looking to implement, which Tim touched on, was the price as the lever and membership. So we were going to offer a paid membership, which accessed lower pricing under the premise that sort of, you know, if you were paying to be a member, small fee, $5 a month, you were more inclined to come more so, and you were, in doing so, you're going to be rewarded with lower pricing. And that was sort of a bit of a hedge against us dropping our pricing, because if you just drop your pricing and hope that more people are going to come, you know, you could be throwing shit at a wall and hoping that it sticks, right?
100%, yeah.
And then you could be into further problems because you've instantly axed, you know, $2,000-$3,000 a week, which, you know, that could be your wages. Could be, you know, a good part of your wages. So there was a lot of different, like, thought processes along the way, but, you know, it's sort of, I was explaining to somebody the other night, pivoting can be great, and it can also be a downfall. So at one point in time, we had these shops and the revenue started to slip, so we looked at how can we bring more money in, and we, I don't know if you recall that Just Meat.
Yes, yeah. Meat supply.
So we were buying, you know, half a ton of meat a week, so it unlocked some, you know, good buying power with our suppliers to get cheaper cuts of meat from that, and we were able to sell meat cheaper than the supermarkets were selling it at that point in time. But we became a butcher and a wholesaler overnight.
Yeah.
And we did some great revenue, and that was a great business if that was all we did. But we had a leaky boat, and we're trying to put sticky tape on the holes to bring more money in, but we let further slip on the shops.
You stopped focusing on
what mattered, you know?
And that's a big point we'll touch on. Talk to us about that.
So we're slipping, you know, some sticky tape on this leaky boat, trying to fix it, bringing more money in to hopefully fix our problems. But then the problems got further because our attention was diverted to where it really needed to be. And I think at that point in time, we both realised that we can't really be focusing on other things. We need to be focusing on what once worked for us and how do we get back. And that's when we dropped everything that, like, took our attention away and focused back onto Burgerhead. And then that's when the rates moved and that's when shit got fucked.
Yeah, it's made a lot harder.
So it just, I think at the very core of it, you need to be committed to what you're trying to deliver and really hone in on that. And we were trying our damn best every week, but it's just that money thing. If the money's not there, you can't afford the people, you can't afford, you know, you gotta, we've always taken the approach of how can we bring more money in as opposed to how can we cut costs. Because when you start cutting costs, it's a race to the bottom, right? You're like, all right, well, get wages lower, where I don't like, I'd like to have wages higher, but like, you know, more people on creates more of an environment, and yeah, we can give better service, we can be faster. We
culture.
Can, yeah, exactly.
So we're talking about the difference between hospital and other businesses. An accountant will come in and say, cut wages, but they don't understand
what happens when you cut wages. You know, I could cut wages, but then your wait goes from 10 minutes to 40, and then you're not coming back because we're not a quick feed, right? So it's like,
yeah,
it's like this really, really fine balancing act. And you know, that's where growing, it got a lot harder, and that's why we're excited to go back to where we're going, because we know, like, we've always done really well on the food trucks, and we know we can come back to the areas that we once serviced with our food trucks, and we can give even better service than we were able to give at our times, you know, and we can give a better experience, and at the end of the day, a better product, like,
yeah,
because it's going to be quicker, it's going to be fresher, and it's, for us, it's more fun. And for our staff, I think, that work on the trucks, they have a ball of time. When it's busy, how good is it when, like, a venue's heaving, right?
It's not, and you guys would agree, that it's not just about the money when it's busy, it's the vibe that it creates.
Oh, man, I couldn't give a shit
about the money.
It's just, I enjoy working when it's busy. I don't like working when it's quiet. It's depressing. It's fucking morbid.
And then you start, like you said, worrying, should I cut this person's wage, and you know, all those things, and it becomes depressing, like 100%. And I think I want to touch on what you said about, you know, trying to create other ways of revenue when you should be focusing on the main thing. And I was just listening to a podcast last week about this guy that owns 100 Pilates studios. And he, at one stage, he goes, hold up, why don't I open in every suburb a Pilates, a yoga, a F45 style concept, and then he just do that. But what happened was, as soon as he started, he tried it, opened four different concepts in one area, all killing it, but then he was dividing his time between four different, and that just meant he wasn't focusing on the main thing, which had 100 stores. So massive lesson, do you reckon, for you boys, is just not keeping your eye on the prize?
Yeah, but in saying that, you can be blindsided and miss a good opportunity.
Yeah,
I call it that Just Meat thing we were doing. It could be a substantial business.
Oh, like, we were offering meat $2 to $3 a kilo cheaper than Woolies, right? And we were, and we could still do that now. Like, the supermarkets are fucking gouging you. Like, they are. And, but like, they've also got their costs. Like, and there's a reason their prices are their prices, and shareholders need to get their money, whatever. But we were doing it as as a service. Obviously, we're making money out of it, but a service to our customers too. If you were supporting us from Burgerhead and you were buying more for us from your weekly needs, it was better for us, you know? And it would be a great business, but we just didn't have the team behind us to make
execute.
That.
Execute.
Yeah, and...
The distractions.
The distraction. You take that distraction and, like... Yeah, had we thrown Burgerhead in the bin and focused on that, then maybe...
Yeah.
But why?
I think you really can't do much more than one business until you've really got a team. Like, you can take, like, call it 3 weeks, a month off, and be okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. It runs itself without having the main guys being there, right? You have the time off.
Like, if we both
die. We really tried that with our store managers, tried to implement a profit share, anything like that, to give them more opportunity, more will in the store, and more responsibility. So we could work on other things for the brand and just become sort of coaches to the store managers and work on things for the brand.
Something I want to, I don't think we have touched on, but had we had our time again, I would have liked to have, like, we've got our botany manager, he's brought his own food truck along the way, and we have a very loose agreement on how that works.
A Burgerhead food truck.
Burgerhead food truck, yeah. So, like, you know, we're not calling it a franchise, not calling it a light, it's like, we're just in partnership together. But, like, that has shown us that, you know, if we had the right people behind us and they incentivized in their own, like, he's making good money for himself with his truck, you know, and it's working for him, it's working for us, that should have been the way we grew. You know, we should have probably dialed in a lot earlier on, like, franchising and grown that way. Would have been a very different story, you know. We're growing for other people's money, they're being rewarded. And it was something we always wanted to get to, but I think we were ambitious in trying to get to 4 stores by ourselves.
Yeah.
Proof that the model worked, I guess.
But that's what we were aiming for. And then in doing so, we, you know, didn't work, but that would have been the way that we probably could have still been around, you know, having great people that had their own money on the line and were making it work. But
yeah, that was the, and we'll talk about the future opportunities and things like that, because I think that's a big part of what we need to chat about. But if you did go back to the day you started Burgerhead, is that, so from a growth point of view, you'd go down that route of opening
franchise
partnership with trucks. But is there any other points in that before we kind of go to the next stage where you'd say, okay, these are the things we'll do different, grow slower, like you said, change the concept for burger trucks where your managers are running stores? And
hindsight's a great tool. And we always say, we always ask our question, if we had more money at the beginning, what would be different?
We just would have chewed through more money,
yeah, right? We didn't know. Like, and more money would have just spent more money to have lost store. If we had $1 million when we begun, like, probably we would do nothing without the knowledge that we have now.
Yeah, I think that's more valuable than any dollar.
And we both thought we were going to be done in year one. So to be in year six or seven? What are we in?
I don't know.
Yeah, bro. Like, it's like, fuck, we got this far, that's a win. Yeah. You know?
I think the only thing I'd do differently is the growth, the way we did it was no bueno. But apart from that, in terms of the business and everything like that, I think what we did was...
Man, we've had a hell of a ride. We've had a lot of great experiences along the way. We've made a lot of great contacts, great people like yourself along the way, and... Like, fuck, yeah, we made a few wrong moves, but they also could have been right moves.
Well, there's this beautiful saying where there's no wrong decision. It's either a decision or the right decision. Yeah. So there's no such thing as a wrong decision. What I do want to touch on the shops that you guys leased. You know, obviously there was one in Penrith, Casula, Banks, Blacktown and Botany. In hindsight, would you have chose different locations in those suburbs, or did you think the locations were fine?
Penrith, we...
It was a necessity.
It was a good hub, but it was all we could afford.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, like we were like 21, 23 when we started. So we didn't have money for a 50 grand bond at Westfield or anything like that.
And then it didn't really make sense along the way when we did finally come into a bit of money to move the shop. Why not just go get a second location when this one's already working, right? Yes. You've cemented yourself. Because those opportunities did present themselves along the way. Like, we could have gone down to Westfield, but...
I think instead of Botany, I would have gone literally 2-3 kilometres north, more inland. Because on one side, you've got the airport, on one side, it's water.
Yeah.
So you've only got caught two sides of land and housing and
like we, yada yada. Like, in saying that, though, we did do very well at Botany in the first year. We paid the store off in a year.
Wow. That's nearly unheard of. Like, it usually takes 2 to 3 years.
We did it, like, frugally as well. Like, we did the build ourselves. We jumped in there, we did the demolition. You know, we had mates come in and do the fit out.
That pizza oven was
the what, sorry?
There was a pizza oven in there.
And we thought it was just like a brick wall and stuff, but it was filled with this like dust, what was it called?
Vermiculite.
Yeah, that stuff. And it went everywhere.
And so we did that store, you know, relatively on a shoestring budget, but we made it look nice, and yes, we got a good return on that. And we owned Botany per se. If you look at a map of our customers, we had a pin on every bloody street, like where a customer, you know, lived in that area that knew about us. So, yeah, the location would be better, but we had a good run there too.
Mm. Blacktown,
I think, is a great location, but just...
Well, Botany's a great location.
No, Blacktown.
Blacktown, we didn't do so well there, but Gringo's that's in there now, in that site, they're doing really well. So I guess you can put that down to maybe marketing.
Yeah, I think we were also very... We were trying to open Casula we opened Blacktown.
I was about to say, so you didn't give it the love that it needed 100%, at the time.
Yeah, and that's where we, you know, go back a few minutes where we said, had we just had one store and opened up Blacktown at that point in time, it'd still be around because we would have more time to dedicated to that. And the overheads on running that shop were extremely low, you know. It was a favourable rent and whatever. And then Gringo's, to his credit, like Richard, who we're in partnership with there, he's the driving force there, and him and his partner Jade, they're really pushing the marketing, they're really pushing the brand, and they're doing everything we didn't do, which we should have been doing, and they are seeing great rewards for doing so.
The Gringos, obviously we'll touch on that, but I mean it is, like you said, the location is fine, but it was just the fact that you put love into it.
100%.
What has Gringos taught you, other than, like I said, putting that time into that business? What has that taught you?
Having great people behind you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Richard's a fucking beast.
I went the other night and I didn't know what was on the menu. I had to like sit and stare, and I own a chunk of it. But that's like the good people. Like Dickie was able to just
It's great trust again. Like with he was one of the founding partners of Burgerhead. Yeah. Whole other story behind that, but he exited but like we've built that relationship back up, and he's doing a phenomenal job.
It's amazing. Is that a future plans? The Gringos concept?
We probably turn that into a food truck, and we'll probably follow the model that we're doing with Burgerhead with the food trucks, because quite frankly, we've cemented a good business doing what we're doing for the food trucks. And there's a lot to take
Burgerhead and a Mexican sort of thing and have them side by side at big events.
We get plenty of big events, and he sees the value in being mobile, less overheads.
Everything you've learnt from Burgerhead, you're going to be able to implement into this.
100%.
He's seen us as well, what we've gone through. He's seen it all. So he's also seen how shit it can be. And also, it's like, what do you want? So for him, he's got a young kid.
Very similar position to us, he wants to be a part of that
experience. So he wants to get to a position where, going to work, he's working hard, but making money and being able to control his life and days off here, there. And
actually, you boys would love this. I was listening to a podcast about Ben Shuri, obviously owner of Attacar. And he just said, for so long I was building this amazing business and I wanted to have excellence in my venues. He goes, but now I want to have excellence in everything I do. So that's being a father, that's being a husband, that's being a business owner, that's being a chef. And I think that's what we're all striving for, right? Because now we know how important it is, the relationships, the kids, the...
Something's always got to give, right?
Yeah,
Something's always got to give. We were just discussing it this morning, but something's always got to give. And if you want to have the best performing business on the street, and you want to have time and relationships around you is going to probably suffer.
I think it's something I've heard is like the rule of three. You can only really give three things your focus.
Your
work, your fitness, and your partner. Probably not going to see your friends too often.
Yeah, which is, something's got to give. Absolutely, yeah. Always. You get to a point where you can start balancing things out, but it takes a long time, and it's probably damaged a lot of relationships along the way.
It's also priorities and what you want. And for us, it was grow, 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 big business, and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I think once you have a kid, you're... priorities in life shifts.
Yeah, that was one of my next questions was about you guys being so honest on social media, and Josh, you touched on it a bit now, seeing your kids on FaceTime doing something for the first time, and it's hard. Like my wife was talking to me about it the other day. Like my first son's photo shoot, where his newborn photos, I wasn't there because I was working, and I'm like, what an idiot. Like, why would I miss that, But at the time, I didn't have an option. That was we could do. Yeah. So you guys have been so honest on social media. What's the reason for it? Like, why?
You actually said something I was going to say off air just before, but I could pretty confidently say that all hospital owners are going through what we have, the rate rises, the inflation, the cost of goods. And for the last 18 months, whenever we've met anyone and they've been like, oh, how's things? And we've gone, yeah, not good.
And
it's like, why are you saying good? Like, we know you're dealing with the same shit.
Yeah.
We were always happy to just be honest. There's no point lying.
Like, what good's gonna come from telling you I'm good when I'm not good?
Especially,
I'm not looking for sympathy, but I also don't want to why am I lying to myself if I tell you I'm good? Like, I'm open enough to it's fucking shit. Like, nobody's doing good at the moment. Like, if you are, well, good for you. I'm happy for you, man. I wish I was, but I'm not.
I just think it's so refreshing that you boys are so honest and so open. And again, I think it's a big part of why I want to chat with you. Like, even if we didn't do the podcast, I think we'd be chatting now and just talking about it. And I think
100%.
It's important for people to understand the journey. And I think most people listening are going to be hospital operators. They're going to be like, thank God these guys are telling us how it is. Because a lot of people don't want to open up, and it could be an ego thing. It could be...
I think everybody just likes to grind. Like, we're doing great. But you're not, man. Like, just be true to yourself.
Yeah.
And it's also like being honest to customers, because a lot of people, sitting on the outside, you came to Burgerhead 6 years ago, you come in once a month, they're opening more shops, where the trucks at all these events, fuck, they must be killing it.
Mm.
And it's pretty refreshing and honest to see someone who on the outside might be killing it, and just being honest about what's really going on and how things really work and mistakes.
Yeah.
Because it might inspire someone who's watching or reading, going through whatever their business is and having issues, and I heard that, won't do that, or little things like that, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I just, again, I thank you for being open and honest. And,
yeah, quite frankly, I just don't care what anybody thinks. Like, if
that's refreshing, man.
Like Tim said earlier, like, most of the people that do give a shit, they people haven't tried. So, like, good for you. You know, like, you want to give me shit, I don't give a fuck.
It's like, it's like those Google reviews, going back to that.
Man, I think I said in, like, our first podcast, like, I just couldn't give two fucks if you, like us or you don't like me. And I always said, I'm not here to make friends, but, like, it is what it is. Like, yeah, like, I just really don't care. I honestly don't care.
Yeah, I don't think anyone understands. And that's why you get to a point where you don't care about these people, where, you know, you do your best for this guest, you give them whatever they want, and then they'll go shit on you with a review, bad review. And I don't know how, I know you're a lot better at it, Josh, than I am, but a bad review still smashes me. Like, I'm
just don't look at it, bro.
turn off notifications.
Close your eyes.
yeah. No, I'm a lot better at dealing with that, but I guess the way you look at it, I think, is a lot better. Like, at the end of the day, the people that care aren't going to leave these terrible reviews. So
100%.
What's the in seven years, other than obviously, like, we talk about the rate rises and things like that and inflation, what's the one thing, the main thing that's changed in hospitality from 7 years ago to now?
The culture around coming to restaurants for us. Cafes are obviously a very different ball game, but our market definitely shifted to offline. Online as opposed to.
I think restaurant is like literally a place for restoration where you'd go on travels and stop in. It's originally what it was for, like, meals out and.
Pretty good. I'm impressed.
I'm pretty sure that's where the word restaurant comes from.
Okay.
And so it's all about, like, rest on your travels and things like that, or, like, and you used to go for meals out with friends and family.
It was an experience.
But when you sit at home, in your undies and just tap a few buttons and it rocks up at your door, everyone's so time poor and stuff like that, that, like, Monday to Thursday, no one's going out eating.
And let's just say, I don't blame them. Like, it is convenient.
It has ruined what restaurants are. And people come in expecting what you can do for me, not, like, let it take its course.
So what's the, if is it's one of those necessary evils that you need it to operate?
Firebomb the Uber Eats office.
I saw something in the media the other day. So Labor Party's trying to, you know, obviously take away the tool that's allowed Uber to be so prolific, which is underpaying workers. It's on the table now to, you know, implement minimum wages, and Uber's gone, oh, we're gonna have to increase prices 85%. Well, that's because you haven't been paying a fair fucking wage to the you know, the people that deliver that service, and it's created a false economy in what these things should actually, the charges behind these. You can't deliver food for $3.50, which is what some of the Uber Eats delivery charges are. You can physically not fucking do it. Mm. You know, minimum wage is $24 or something, like, around that mark. So, you know, it's, you do the math, and it's this, you're not getting your food in, like, whatever it is, 10 minutes of work. It's been underpaying people. It's allowed that to happen, and it's happened on Uber's part.
So where's the shift? If the government look into that.
If the government increases it and Uber have to increase their prices, I think we're going to see a shift back to, you know, a more fair economy, where the only winner here is, you know, Uber is saying they're not making profit, which
the drivers aren't making fucking money, and
the restaurants aren't making money, so somebody's got to be making money, and, you know, big business with, you know, great accountants and lawyers, they're making money. Otherwise, they wouldn't still be here.
That's right.
You know, six or 7 years in doing what they're doing. So I think that has created a environment which, in our space at least, has created an unfair dynamic, and it's taken a lot of money off the table. I think we pay 130 odd grand a year in Uber fees. Plus, you know.
I was going to say, is if Uber Eats didn't exist, restaurants wouldn't be struggling the way they are.
They are, yeah. Like,
that's a great point.
2017, 18, you know, up until, you know, before it really took off with COVID. You know, when Uber didn't exist, we had a very healthy balance sheet, you know, a very healthy profit and loss. And then that comes in and wipes off 120, 30 grand off, you know, that was profit. That was, there's no other way around, that was profit.
Mm.
You know, your margins are, you know, axed. Cafes are very, you know, lucky that they haven't had that really eat into their market, which is great.
Yeah, I mean, cafes, I mean, we have Uber at Percy's, but...
It's a very, I would, from the outside, I would say it's a very small slice.
How many people are ordering scrambled eggs on toast home delivered? Like, they do.
And people on a Sunday.
Yeah, that's actually, our brekkie burgers are unbelievably popular, but yeah, it's...
It's a small slice. Not even for us, it became like 40% of our, and that's why we built our own, we got our own app, and we had a, tried doing our own delivery along the way, and... To Uber's credit, the price that they're, you know, like the commission it makes it, but it's just, it's the price of convenience needs to be a lot higher for the customer.
Yeah.
And that in turn will then, you know, lower demand. So it's as much a big business problem as a customer's being lazy and wanting convenience problem.
And then obviously you get your own drivers, that's another logistic problem, you know, insurance.
In COVID it worked because people wanted to work and we had drivers, we had more shifts for our staff, we did our own delivery. And it worked when the volume was there. But if you want to do your own delivery, you need the volume at the same time.
For sure. Obviously, October 29 is the last day of the physical stores. You know, it's, again, the Penrith store, it's been, I've been a regular there for as long as I can remember. The exciting thing is, like we said, Burger Head's not going anywhere. Let's talk about the next year or two. What does that look like for you boys?
So everyone's been saying, oh, you're going to be ready for your rest after a shut, but the trucks are booked.
That's amazing.
We've got a mental, like, November, December, January already.
How many trucks do you have on the road?
Three. No, two trucks and a trailer, but yeah. Same, mate.
So there's three on the road, and they're all pretty much booked out from now until the end of the year, unless you want something on a Monday to Wednesday. But it's going to be about just running those. We have a couple clients we supply, yourself included. So it's still just working away at those.
Can I just say, though, the feedback, the fact that you guys came into our business, helped us with the recipes, supplied us the high quality that you're doing, it's been, one, it created so much ease for us. So I think, like, the feedback we got on the burgers is unbelievable, right? Everyone knows you. But it's the fact that you guys were so open with us. Said, yeah, we'll help you out. What do you need? Recipe? Like, it's just... I can't explain to you how much that's helped. So that's again credit to you boys. So
hopefully a couple more leads from this.
Yeah, stand 100%.
No, but it's running our trucks and running the event space. It's running.
It's business as usual.
Yeah.
And what happens with the production space? Like, what's are you guys planning on pushing wholesale?
So we just need to figure out where we're at once everything wraps up. Run this, and then once we got time and back on top of things. Want to grow a couple more clients. We probably want to do another truck for ourselves. We want to start doing our burger packs for pickup and delivery. We've got a partner that we can deliver up and down the East Coast overnight.
Amazing.
So people in Brizzy can get a barbecue pack for home. Start to build those up. And then the growth plan would be to sort of franchise our trucks out and keep the burger brand going strong.
Yeah, it's... Definitely been like getting back to, like Tim mentioned a few times, so the first time we've been able to sit here and plan about, oh, how are we going to be great again, you know? Whereas we aren't just like, fuck, how are we going to put that fire out, you know? It's refreshing to get back into a position where we can, you know, dream. And like, well, how are we going to go forward, you know?
Mm.
We wanted to grow the supply side earlier because, you know, that's a good business for us. It's prep that we're already doing for ourselves.
Yeah.
But that, again, presents new issues, cash flow issues, you know. You pay on time, which is nice.
It's good to hear. You I haven't spoken to accounts.
Phil's probably not seen an invoice.
But, you know, like, if we got other clients that didn't pay on time and, you know, that snowballs, you know, so that presents new challenges. So we don't want to grow that side too quickly because that could be detrimental. And then... But it's getting back into being in a position of control again. Yeah. Like, that's what we're most...
And you feel you got that back now. Like,
we're closing in on it.
Yeah. I can see it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's the franchise and the trucks, like, where we wanted to go with the stores. If we were to sell a franchise Burger Head store, that could be in excess of 400,000 and margins on a brick and mortar are so slim, whereas selling a truck is much more affordable. More affordable barrier to entry for people. And with us running the supply and the prep side of it, it's a much more profitable business for someone to buy.
And so you're not dealing with the Uber Eats because you're going to events.
You rock up, you cut open bags from us.
So it's real costs, like the money you're making is like real profit, like real money. Like, yeah. Your turnover doesn't mean anything.
And it's Josh mentioned earlier in the episode, our body manager bought his own truck, Steve. He's not doing crazy events like the Easter shows and all those sort of things. He's doing breweries on the weekend, and he's making decent money for himself.
So,
it could be a side gig. Like, it could be you could do a 9 to 5 and then a burger truck on the weekends for yourself. And
so as if someone's listening and they want us, is it a perfect side hustle business?
Yeah.
Is it something that can be full time?
Yeah, like our ideal person at the moment is, you know, somebody who has been in the industry 5-10 years. They've got a little bit of money to be able to like do something themselves, but they also want to maybe just keep that stability. That maybe they've got a mortgage, and you know, that was Steve's position. He had a job with us in managing Botany, and then the truck on the side was just giving him that extra money. He had a couple mortgages he needed to service.
So either that'll go stuck shelves or Woolies, he said overnight.
Yeah,
yeah.
And
so
just don't keep paying the mortgages.
So like, man, we'll help you out. We'll, you know, we'll waive that sort of fee because he'd been around and helped us the last year and a bit. And he's returning himself, you know, it's suiting his needs. So somebody could come in and make an extra 1,200-1,300 over 2 days, and you know, that's
good side hustle.
It's a good side hustle, you know.
And so someone that wants to get into this says, hey, look, I wanna be a Burger Head franchisee with a food truck. Is it something you guys will start planning, like, all right, these are the events you can, do you plan the events, or is it on the franchisee to plan the events?
They've got to get their own.
There's
things,
so many we get that we can't do because we're booked.
Yeah.
So there's things that we could send your way, or you can go after your own. So
and
Steve's
there's been stuff for Steve that we've been trying to throw at him, but he's already booked out, you know.
Wow.
And so for us, it is a great growth plan, but we also haven't got all of the wheels in motion and worked out how to do that.
And you're happy to grow that organically and slow.
Slowly, yeah.
There's no more.
No more of this, like, yeah.
And you know, we've spoken a bit, Josh, about, I don't know, Tim, if this is the same plan as you, but, you know, you'd love to move overseas one day. And
I would.
is that something that you think you could do with what you're planning to do in the future?
Yeah, well, that's, you know, the whole divide and conquer. Like, I think we touched on it earlier, but Tim's money's my money's Tim's money, effectively, in this.
Actually, so, married couple. I love
actually
that.
Actually, married couple, mate. and so, yeah, like we've been, you know, looking into maybe opening something in Bali, maybe.
Adam and Casey, if you're listening,
hook a brother up.
Yeah, but no, it's my second home. I've been there. I just got back from my honeymoon from there, and I've been there many, many, many times. And I love the island. And
it's just amazing when Adam was chatting. He's like from Bali.
Yep.
He just said, like, I don't understand why you do business in Australia when you can do it in Bali. Like, where he has to hire his own health inspectors because Bali doesn't have any. Like, you can do whatever you want. So he implements the systems that you would have in Australia, but he's not getting smashed with the...
Mate, I paid, what about the other day? We're looking to do a little bit of work at the Penrith store to just, you know, sort out some of our lease issues, like splitting up the tenancy there. We have to construct a wall. Now, there's that much fucking red tape in this country that I have to get in place to just get a wall built and signed off on, that this wall is probably going to cost us in excess of 20 grand.
Wow.
Just to get it, like, rubber stamped and everything. Like, you could build half a restaurant over there for that, you know, that sort of money. And
yeah.
Yeah, like, it's also a new challenge, you know. We've done business here. I'd like to try and do something. I've lived overseas in the past. I lived in Sweden. And I miss that like zest for adventure that we sort of lost in, you know, running a business here. You get bogged down and everything. And if I can have a crack at that, Tim would also, you know, be very happy to be a part of that too. And Tim will probably hold the fort here for a bit and then come and visit and help out there and
eventually move.
Plan is to divide and conquer to begin with, so you get something in Bali up and running. I'll keep running our trucks and grow it, and then back and forth between the two. And then if Bali really, really kicks off, move over there more permanently. Otherwise, keep going back and forth, keep growing trucks.
Yeah, Adam said to me, you know, I was once talking, I was like, what advice would you give someone that wants to come over to Bali or work in another country? He's like, if you want to live the life that they're living over there, so is Bali the lifestyle you want to live? If it is, then go open a business there. But if you're going there you boys obviously are passionate about Bali, you love Bali, obviously the business opportunities are great, so it makes sense to go over there and give it a shot, right?
Yeah,
so
it's not you know, left foot in, right foot out sort of thing.
Yes,
you need to be committed. It's going to present different challenges. There might
business.
Be, yeah, they,
be,
from
know.
People I've spoken to, it's... You know, it can be easier in certain aspects, but it can be a shit ton more difficult in other aspects. You know, as you just said, you mightn't have all the red tape you have here. but you also mightn't have the level of education and staffing that you have here, and there's a lot of unknowns. Yeah. I don't know the laws of local country. I don't fully know the language, you know, so it's going to be a whole heap of other challenges. Yeah. But that's what life's about, you know. Business is a problem to be solved. Let's get some new problems to solve, I guess.
Exciting. And you guys are well equipped with all the things you've dealt with over the last few years to get in and say, all right, this is a problem. How do we deal with it? Move on.
Battle hardened.
Yeah. So if someone is in your position, is about to open their first store, what's the number one piece of advice you'd give them before signing the lease?
Before signing a lease. I guess you need to really know if that's what you want. Because it's not an easy fucking feat. I'd work for somebody doing exactly what I wish to do, with like pretty much what you did with the grounds. I'd go and work for somebody who's got a very similar venue to what I want to do for at least 6 months, and try and be their shadow, you know, and really understand their problems, because they're going to become your problems.
Yeah.
And see if it's really what you want. And I've always said this to anybody that wants to get into hospitality, really know if that's really what you want, because it is a bloody hard industry, but it can be rewarding.
Yeah.
It can be rewarding, but it can be fucking hard.
Timmy?
That's pretty good.
Spot on. Finish on. I think that's the biggest thing. I think that's the one advice I always give, is like, I 100% say go for it. Just make sure it's what you want. Like, are you willing to kind of keep yourself up at night? Is your partner going to support you? There's so many factors.
It's not a part time. It's not a part time business.
It's your whole life.
Everyone wants to own a restaurant. No one wants to run it.
Yeah.
So like, you got to be committed, and 5 years is a long time.
Thomas Keller, obviously, that owns the restaurants in New York, one of the best chefs in the world. He said, you know, we went ambitious. We got 7 venues. He goes, but me and my friends all wish that we had the one shop.
I've heard that.
You know, it's crazy. Like, it's, and he's
one of the most. You're nostalgic on that time when it was just one, right? I think you and I have already talked about
that. Yeah.
We've even said we wish we were keeping. A part of us wishes we just had Penrith and then still doing all the trucks and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But we're also fine with that.
Is there a chance a store will ever come back in the works?
I'm never going to say never.
Pretty slim, but yeah, never say never.
Maybe in Bali.
Yeah, other than Bali, of course. Yeah, yeah. So.
It might be met further down. There was people coming out of the woodwork when we announced it, trying to save it, or what can we do? Or there was actually people trying to do GoFundMes.
Really?
Look, it's just for us, it's the page is shut. You know, like, we just don't want to. The fixed costs in this country are so fucking heavy. You got your rent, you got your insurance, you've got your work cover, you've got, you know, the list goes on. Your gas bills have doubled in price in like last 2 years. It's just become untenable to be in our space at the moment. And, you know, we see ourselves as getting out at the right time for us. And of course, people are going to be making money at this point in time, but there's a lot of people that aren't. And like, for us, the at the moment, the chapter's shut, but a new chapter's beginning.
Yeah.
You know, and we're happy with the way we're going with the trucks. We enjoy it. We do these big events. We've got, you know, more music festivals coming up. We just did one on the, you know, week past that we had. It's actually my favourite event I've ever been
really?
A part of. I like techno, and it was a good techno festival, and I had a chance to have a boogie, you know. So there's not many times you get to split from work and go have a good, you know, see some cool DJs you wanted to
That's
see.
That's mad. Yeah, I've obviously known you boys for a long time, and I've never seen, no matter what's happened, I've never seen the energy drop. And obviously, you know, personally, at home, privately, there's always, but you guys have been able to maintain this unbelievable level of energy and positivity and optimism. And like I said, I'm grateful for our friendship. I know we usually catch up in a car park or passing through, but you boys, like, one, thank you for the friendship, but also, like, thanks for inspiring a lot of people, man, me included. So I wish you boys a lot of success in the future. Is there anything you want to add to this before we finish up? Anything that you think I've missed that talks about your journey?
I think it really shaped a thing of what do you really want as well. Like, the shift in priorities and what's really important to you, which is also part of why we've gone this way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're going through shit, just fucking keep going. There's always a way out.
I guess if anybody is listening to this and is going through a similar struggle, happy for you to reach out and provide some advice on, you know, ways to get out of problems that aren't always evident. There's always tools in the business world to address problems that you that you might not know about. And so not until you start to speak to people and ask for advice from different people that like better pathways come out, you know. So fuck, if you are struggling and you know you do need somebody to help you out, like definitely reach out to us through Facebook or Instagram if you know Phil, because we've learned a lot along the way that you know has helped us to be able to still continue going on.
I think anyone in, not many people would have been able to make it through, you know, and keep this, again, this optimism that you guys have. So credit to you boys. Thank you for obviously chatting and being so honest. And appreciate it.
Cheers, Phil.
Thanks, boys.